This podcast is sponsored by Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management, award-winning wealth managers who go above and beyond to support and guide you. Visit candowealth.com to start building your wealth with confidence.
Hello and welcome to Coffeehouse Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and I'm joined by Katie Balls and James Forsyth. Well, late last night, Keir Starmer finally succeeded, is probably not quite the right word, but finally managed to do something involving moving some of his top team around. James, what happened?
So we had a dramatic moment on Saturday night when it came out, turned out that Keir Starmer had sacked, or supposedly sacked, Angela Rayner as party chair. Now, it's important to understand here that because of the way the Labour Party works, Angela Rayner as deputy leader has her own mandate. The leader cannot sack the deputy leader from the post of deputy leader, which has created this, you know, remember the tensions well between Jeremy Corbyn and Tom Watson. Now, the Keir Starmer team said, no, we weren't sacking Angela Rayner, we were moving her to a different, more public job. We then had all the way until 10 p.m. yesterday waiting for news of this reshuffle, which when it came was not that dramatic. Angela Rayner is going to shadow Michael Gove with a remarkably long job title. Rachel Reeves takes over from Annalise Dodds as shadow chancellor, and Annalise Dodds is then put in charge as party chair of developing policy and the like. Now, I think it was fairly well known at the time that Keir Starmer would have liked to have made Rachel Reeves his shadow chancellor from the off, but feared the reaction from the left if he had appointed the figure so associated with the Labour right to do the second biggest job in the shadow cabinet. But I think this and the fact that the reshuffle is really not that big, Starmer comes out of this with less authority than he went into it. And I'm not clear that it's a particularly stronger team. You know, all those people saying, oh, you know, is he going to bring back Yvette Cooper and Hilary Benn, for example? You know, hard to argue that they wouldn't raise the quality of a shadow cabinet. That hasn't happened. And you've still got lots of people shadowing jobs that don't exist. One of Angela Rayner's titles is that she's the shadow Secretary of State for the future of work. There is no department for the future of work. And I think this is the kind of the problem. Keir Starmer as well, is the only way Labour are getting into the news at the moment is when they're in crisis. So the big political drama is kind of Boris Johnson versus Nicola Sturgeon in DREF 2, and Labour are only seen in the news at the moment in terms of bad things happening. There's no one talking about the fact they took the West of England mayoralty off the Tories, the fact they held on in Wales, Andy Burnham's margin in Manchester, which was almost as impressive as Ben Hampton's margin in the Tees Valley. All of these things are all being crowded out by just a story of chaos. And there is clearly a lot of unhappiness in the Labour Party right now.
Katie, James just mentioned Andy Burnham, and he has put his head above the parapet to say that should his party need him, he would be happy to help out in the future. Does this mean that Keir Starmer's leadership is actually in question now?
I don't think it's in immediate danger. I think it is damaged. And it was interesting, Andy Burnham, when he said this, this was before even the Angela Rayner reshuffle row. This is actually slightly earlier on Saturday. But he said, you know, they know where I am, they need me. And it was, again, it was almost Andy Burnham in a speech, really notably, and clearly because he won in Greater Manchester, but saying that he was a politician who's all about where he was, the location, rather than, I think, thinking of his party first. And he said he was loyal to the area. And you can see, and I think Andy Burnham is now the bookie's favourite to be the next Labour leader, how if Keir Starmer is coming under a lot of flack in terms of his leadership, in terms of the red wall, but lots of people now returning to concerns that we did hear in the Labour leadership initially, but whether, you know, remain a lawyer, I say in inverted commas, can actually, you know, win back these seats. I think it's difficult for him that Andy Burnham is on the seat. Now, clearly, I think if you're looking at the various demographics and votes, Greater Manchester is something we would expect Labour to do well. But the point Andy Burnham made in his speech was, look, I've won the red wall in this area, looking at, you know, some of the areas within it where the Labour vote had gone up for him. So you can see him starting to make that pitch. Now, it's not a leadership challenge. I don't think we're anywhere near that. But I do think that Keir Starmer has made his situation worse through this Labour reshuffle. He managed to unite MPs on both sides of the party on Saturday night in anger after how he handled the situation of Angela Rayner. And as James has touched on, it's just, if you were going to really give her another job and it was going to be a good job, it's very incomprehensible as to how you ended up in a situation where the reshuffle took, you know, over 24 hours because you had protracted negotiations between Rayner and Starmer's team over what she'd actually accept in order to go back in the tent. And also, I think that Labour going forward Blair Brown, clearly, you know, in power, so it had more potency. But it's not a healthy setup we're now in. It's clearly a lot of bad blood between Team Rayner and Team Starmer. We hear that Angela Rayner actually wanted Keir Starmer to get rid of some of his aides, potentially, in terms of those negotiations. There are people in his top team who her people do not trust and think are out to get her. And clearly, there are people in Keir Starmer's team who think that Angela Rayner's people, something she denies, for throwing a few denials, have been briefing, you know, actively against them for some time and undermining them. Now, you cannot get rid of her really as deputy leader. She's now in a position with her very long job title where I just think this is going to just simper away in quite a negative and distracting way for the Labour leadership.
James, one of the things that Keir Starmer focused on during the election campaigns that we've just seen was the building row over sleaze allegations against Boris Johnson. And we have an announcement today from the Parliamentary Commissioner for Standards, who's investigating whether Boris Johnson broke the rules over his trip to Mustique with Carrie Symons in 2020. There's a question about who funded that trip. Just tell us, bring us up to speed on what's happening.
This is an odd story in that Boris Johnson declared in, I mean, this holiday was, I think, fairly public knowledge. So everyone was looking to see who paid for it. He declared that David Ross, Tory donor, who has had some various controversies surrounding him in the past, had paid for it. But then David Ross seemed to suggest that he hadn't paid for it. And so the question that now remains, the obvious question is, who did pay for it and why wasn't that properly declared? Parliamentary Commissioner for Standards now investigating this. One of the problems for Boris Johnson is that this investigation is into him personally. While at the moment the Electoral Commission investigation into the refurbishment of Downing Street flat is into whether the Tory party did everything correctly, this is very much into him personally. And also Boris Johnson's other problem is he has already been in trouble with the Parliamentary Commissioner for Standards for various late declarations in the past. And so, you know, the question is whether, you know, the Parliamentary Commissioner for Standards decides to hold his kind of previous record in this regard against him. But I also think this comes back to Katie's point, right, which is the job of responding to this stuff falls to the Shadow Chancellor of the Duchy of Lancaster, the kind of odd title for the Cabinet Office Secretary of State. And Angela Rayner is now kind of chief, kind of, it's her quote out from Labour today about this investigation. You could have seen that if in a better functioning relationship between leader and deputy, could have said, look, we need to show voters, we expose Tory sleaze and corruption, and we're sending Angela Rayner in as one of our strongest players to do that. The fact that this is not how the reshuffle played out does speak exactly to the tensions that Katie was discussing. But I also think these personal investigations into Boris Johnson, I think, are a bigger danger for him than the Electoral Commission investigation into the Downing Street flat.
And I think in terms of where does this go, because we've heard a lot, some of an anonymous quote, you know, looking at local election results, which is, you know, well, this shows wallpaper doesn't matter. Westminster bubble classic, they're obsessed. Labour took it too far. That photo op, quite cringeworthy, of Keir Starmer and John Lewis, you know, actually perhaps did the Labour leader harm? And I think that it's fed into this idea that sleaze in a way is not touching Boris Johnson and perhaps won't. But I think when you're looking at these inquiries, as James said, the reason I think this is quite significant is because it could lead to something quite damaging. Now, they have lots of powers they can have. One is that you could be suspended from the Commons. And if you're suspended for a certain amount of time, you could face, you know, recall, a by-election and so forth. I think it's unlikely to see how we get to a Boris Johnson by-election. But I think if you look at the rules which were recently changed, what it can mean is if the Parliamentary Commissioner found that Boris Johnson had gone wrong, and we know he's on, you know, various final warnings in this stuff, on the holiday, or if they later down the line choose to investigate the flat, you could have a situation where they recommend the Prime Minister is suspended, and then we get to a situation where the Commons has to vote on that. Now, I don't think we can really see a scenario where the Tory MPs would say, yes, we want to suspend our Prime Minister. But it does, I think, bring a certain level of theatre to things and mean that we're back, you know, in the news. And you never quite know this stuff when that dreaded phrase cut through, you know, is going to happen. So I don't think that Tory sleaze as a theme is completely over yet. All the government is out of the woods on this.
James, finally, Nicola Sturgeon has been warning Boris Johnson today that it's a question of when, not if, with a second independence referendum. Do you think Boris Johnson agrees with that?
I think Boris Johnson is not going to say that there's never going to be one. It's very striking that there's been no repeat of his kind of once in a generation means 40-odd years from now, which is what he said at the beginning of the year in an Andrew Marr interview. I think that's because they know that that goes down very badly with those swing voters who are going to decide the question when it is put. So I think what you will see is the UK government essentially play for time. And I think they will say, not now, it's not the right time, we're recovering from the pandemic. And I think they have been helped by that, by the fact that while the SNP are comfortably the largest party in the Scottish Parliament, and there is a pro-independence majority in the Parliament, it's hard to see the election results as a kind of reflecting a kind of settled will that there's a great desire for independence. The SNP didn't win an overall majority. Now, the electoral system makes that hard, but the SNP have won overall majorities in it in the past. And secondly, if you add up the votes for parties and assume that everyone votes straight down constitutional lines, which I think is a slight simplification, you basically end up that in the constituency votes, the Unionist Party's got slightly more votes, and in the list part of the election, the pro-independence party's got very fractionally more votes. So I think it's hard to see this election result as suggesting that you know that there is a settled will in favour of a second independence referendum. I think the government will play for time, and I think the question then is, if Nicola Sturgeon pushes and pushes, does she pay a price? I mean, all the polling suggests that voters in Scotland aren't particularly keen to see a referendum within the next 2 years. And I think the challenge for the UK government is to avoid falling for Sturgeon's provocations. I think she's going to try and say lots of things to get government ministers to say things, so that you have a headline like you had in Daily Telegraph on Saturday. You know, Johnson says no to Indyref 2, because if she can align the question of whether Scotland should be independent with whether Scotland should have the right to have a referendum, that benefits her and her cause. So I think what you will see is lots of Nicola Sturgeon trying to get Tory government ministers to fall into a trap of saying something provocative that gets played up in the Scottish press. And the challenge for the Westminster government is to avoid doing that, is to always to emphasise cooperation, to sound reasonable, and to make it look like Nicola Sturgeon do all the running on this, so that she's what comes across as something akin to a constitutional obsessive.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Katie. And thank you for listening.